Welcome to The Virtual Shift, a show looking at the seismic changes happening in healthcare with virtual care at the epicenter. Join me and my guests as we look at key cultural and policy shifts impacting how providers, payers, and patients connect, as well as how care is being reimagined both for today and the future. Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Tom Foley. You can learn more about this show by visiting the program on healthcarenowradio.com, and be sure to follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at FoleyTom. And the hashtag, The Virtual Shift. And today we have a special guest, Dr. Nick Bertel. He's the Chief Digital Officer at Prisma Health. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
Dr. Bertel, tell us a little bit about your position at Prisma Health and a little bit about Prisma Health as well.
Sure. I'm actually a practicing internal medicine physician for the past 8 years now. And serve as the Chief Digital Officer and Vice Chair for Innovation and Clinical Affairs at Prisma Health. And I help lead digital health and focus on patient-provider engagement and experience to deliver frictionless care. Prisma Health is the largest, most comprehensive, locally owned nonprofit hospital in South Carolina. It was formed about three and a half years ago with Palmetto Health and Greenville Health System merged to form Prisma Health. We span over 50% of our state based on our catchment area, about 18 hospitals, 30,000 team members, 330 ambulatory practices, and about 45% of South Carolina lives within 15 minutes of us. And we're also the largest private employer in the state.
Very interesting. Very impressive as well. So tell us a little bit about Prisma Health's virtual care delivery services, if you will.
Sure. Our digital services really go around a couple of aspects, both from a synchronous and asynchronous standpoint. So from the asynchronous standpoint, we have solutions that are direct to consumer that allow you to be seen for acute but non-emergent issues right online through answering evidence-based questions to a solution that we have. And it gets you to a point where you need treatment. It'll help navigate. Either you need treatment right there and it'll give you a diagnosis and send that prescription to your pharmacy, or it'll escalate it to our nurse practitioner that reviews every one of those cases to see if something else needs to be done or if you need to come into the office. Now, since COVID, we've accelerated significantly the use of video visits or synchronous telehealth. Since March of last year, we've done about 700,000 virtual visits, both on the ambulatory side as well as on the acute side. And we've been providing a lot of the primary care services through that mode of delivery since COVID. In the beginning, the numbers were very high because we knew that patients were really told to kind of shelter at home and be safe and didn't want to put them in harm's way by coming to a hospital system or a clinic where they would have a lot of other patients there. So we provided actually virtual visits, and luckily through the public health emergency, the federal and state payers all started to cover those services so patients wouldn't be left with the bill and they could use their insurance. And that really prevented a lot of patients from exacerbating their chronic disease and ending up in the hospital, which is the last place we wanted them to be. We've also continued to expand those services, and one of the things that we try to do is form a seamless digital continuum of services from asynchronous to synchronous, but by also using automation. We started to really use automation or chatbots during COVID-19, which, you know, did vaccine outreach as well as checking to see if you had COVID-19 and you know, where did you need to go to get tested? And I think we did about 172,000 of those just for around testing. And now we're moving more towards shifting towards vaccine and letting people know the differences between vaccines and answer their commonly asked questions. And then also tells you where you can go to get the vaccines and availability and things of that nature. And the last one I would say is remote patient monitoring. That's something that's growing pretty fast. And we're focusing on three chronic disease states to start with: hypertension, diabetes, and CHF. And as Prisma Health, we have a significant large amount of at-risk patients, and we're really data-driven to make sure we find what patients really, based on chronic disease and their severity, do we need to enroll so we can get them to their goal easier. So that allows them to have a wearable device, then if that wearable device detects something out of range, then it has the automation piece for the chatbot to say, hey, I noticed your numbers were out of range. Are you taking your medicines? Are you missing doses? Would you like someone to call you? And then that could even potentially lead to a video visit or an office visit. So those are some of the things that we're doing, but we're also looking into a lot of other things around emerging technologies, such as 3D printing for diabetics, for foot orthotics, as well as use of VR and palliative care patients, as well as behavioral health.
So prior to COVID, virtual care, digital health was seen to be a nice to have, and COVID forced health systems to quickly adopt something. Just give me something so that I can keep and maintain access with my patient base. And you seem to have, and Prisma Health has seemed to have transformed, leveraged that, but quickly transforming the way in which delivery of care is embraced in your community. Fair statement?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
What would you say are the kind of the key components? You talked a little bit about them, but I didn't know if that covered everything. What would you say the key components of a digital health strategy would be?
Well, number one, you definitely need to understand the population. You never start with the technologies first. Start with the problem and understand where your gaps are and where you really need to do some outreach. You also need to understand your challenges around tech literacy, access to hardware, technology, broadband, things of that nature. And then you need to put a sound strategy together that is scalable, that's data driven, that's outcome driven, and is patient centered. And what we try to do here is not throw five different solutions at patients and five different ways to get into the system. We wanted to form a digital continuum. And then obviously you want to get your executive buy-in through the organization, which is extremely important, so that you have the ability to support it, both from an IT perspective as well as a provider perspective, and that everyone is able to use these tools to augment care, not to say we're going to not see patients in the office or anything else. It's to augment care and gives patients more options. So you'll see your no-show rates drop, you'll see compliance increase. And those are the things that we went into digital health for. It's not only, providing easier access, but we wanted to improve the outcome of the patient. And what we find, and I've been practicing about 17, 18 years, and, one of the things that you find is you see a patient every 3 to 6 months or a year, you don't know what happens in between. So having wearable technology that can give you some insight on when we need to intervene in between those office visits, or understanding when a person is getting into trouble before they even know it, so that you can intervene to lower those ER visits. So those are some of the key components that I think you have to consider.
Yeah, I have often said that I use the average Medicare patient with 5 chronic conditions. The stats are from CMS that those patients see 9 different doctors in a given year. They're only in front of those doctors 15 hours. The key element here relative to the path to wellness, to your point, is what happens the other 8,745 hours, right? Correct. That's really where the core of care needs to be engaged. And to your point, reaching out outside of the brick and mortar or a digital encounter, to your point, monitoring someone with glucose, someone with diabetes, hey, your measures are out of reach. Do you need some help? So it's just those little things make a huge difference. Do you see let me back up. So the key here, though, is how you talked about inhibitors. So digital health means technology. Some folks don't have smartphones, don't have computing devices, and don't even have access to broadband. How do you address those core challenges in your community?
Yeah, it's a real thing. And, a recent actual JAMA paper said that older, age, female, sex, black, race, Latino ethnicity, lower household income are all associated with lower use of video for telehealth medicine. And a lot of those things come down to some things I mentioned earlier around that tech literacy and access to broadband and smart devices, computers, etc. And so what you have to try to do is, again, work with your community leaders and state leaders to help with that. So one of the things we're doing, like many other health systems, are applying for that FCC grant around broadband and being able to get some monies to help those communities at need by providing broadband directly to their house. And there's a project that's actually going on in Allendale County. It's one of the most rural counties in South Carolina, where we're doing exactly that through a project that the state is sponsoring. As well as, you know, you're thinking about those smart devices. You know, there's a lot of folks out there that are donating PCs and smartphones and things of that nature, and being able to, through either your foundation or through other community outreach, be able to get these, curate these devices so you can hand these out. They're locked in to, for really more for healthcare, and that's what you have to do. And then I think you have to also educate. Education extremely important, and I think you also have to understand that it's not all about the tech. It's not about, yeah, you got to have the infrastructure there for sure, but you also want to make sure that you have the avenues of care that are traditional as well. So maybe that's sending out a care team member to their house to help out. Maybe it's setting up a transportation to come to your office to be seen. So I think you have to have a lot of those. And again, technology, if it's used as a tool to for enablement, then you'll get people to their outcomes, and hopefully some of those things are going away. And there are other companies, you know, if you look at Elon Musk and what he's doing with Starlink and allowing, you know, broadband access, it's absolutely amazing what he's trying to do there. And actually, he's blanketed all of North America with this this solution already. And so maybe we could potentially partner with entrepreneurs and other folks like that that will allow for broadband access to rural areas of South Carolina.
Yeah, we've had plenty of conversations with Starlink. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Virtual Shift. I'm your host, Tom Foley. I'm speaking with Dr. Nick Bertel, Chief Digital Officer at Prisma Health. So, Nick, great points, but you know, I'm the consumer. How do you know? I hear you, and I'm with you 100%. We need to do. There's a lot of education and a general awareness. But is there a call for or a need for a national strategy on how we embrace urban America as well as rural America? Not that there's the folks in the middle don't need assistance either, but those are the two greatest challenges, right? Urban America, rural America, and getting the access to care. What are your thoughts on a national strategy?
Yeah,
need for national strategy.
It's got to definitely start in D.C., and there's a lot of folks lobbying, you know, different payers and CMS around support of telehealth beyond the public health emergency of COVID-19. And I think we need to have policies in place to support it. I think as most of healthcare is moving to value-based care, this is going to help get people to their goal. It's definitely not the tradition, as you mentioned, Tom, about getting 15 minutes of airtime in front of a with a doctor, you know, three times a year, maybe twice a year. You're never going to get the goal there unless you're just fully driven to do that yourself and you're healthy otherwise. But I think it really, you got to work with your state and federal agencies on policy and your payers to support it. And I think that's where one of the biggest things, because the biggest barrier before pre-COVID was that most payers would not support telehealth visits. You would have to pay out of pocket for those that's why they call it direct-to-consumer products. You have to pay for yourself. So $20, $30 for a virtual visit or $40, whatever it may be based on your market, is what traditionally was available to patients. I think with this, the government also, as part of those policies, like for example, for Medicaid, you need to be able to supply a kit that has all this on it, or have a reimbursable amount that is given to health system to say, okay, for your initial visit, you're able to give a kit that's worth, let's say, $100. And in that kit comes XYZ. And that support is a one-time outreach to, and you remember that kit can be used and scalable for everyone in the household. So it doesn't have to be one per each person. You can scale that to others. And I think that's where it's going to really start to grow. That's why you see so many telehealth companies merging and working together and partnering with payers in this regard.
So do you think there's always this discussion in the market, right? I came from New Jersey. I used to go to obviously local to New Jersey. I go to New York for services. I go to Philadelphia for services. Right. I would agree that the only person that really knew about me, at least from a payment perspective, was my payer.
Yeah.
My health team didn't know. Right. And maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't. It's obviously that's a HIPAA issue and a patient choice. But where do you see the role of the payer versus the provider in this reimagined delivery of care model?
I think it's still going to be a hybrid approach. I think that if payers truly believe and support improved outcomes, then they will do everything they can to support that mission with their providers. And I think that's the key. Now, you also see, though, that there's been a major shift where major healthcare systems, large ones, are becoming self-insured and becoming the payer provider. If you look at some major systems like Kaiser Permanente on the West Coast, that's something that they do and have been doing well for a long time. And they have over 100,000 folks in remote patient monitoring because, they want people to stay at goal and stay healthy. And it makes sense because they save money in the end, because ERs and high cost centers like being hospitalized cost a lot of money to the health system. So I think that there's going to have to be a very tight partnership between the two. It just can't be I do a service and you pay me, but right. It needs to be sort of a collaborative between the two, and there needs to be data sharing. So to your point earlier, Tom, you go to Philly and you go to New York and you go all these different areas. Well, there needs to be some sort of transparency on record, so long as the patient consents on that. So there's no duplication of labs and imaging, and the patient's not ping pong from one place to the other, which there's a lot of wastage in healthcare because of duplicate things ordered, because the doctor may not have an idea that you had those things already and I don't need to repeat them. So part of that's coming out of the Cures Act that says that, you have open notes, your providers are sending you the notes and you have access to your record and full transparency. So that if you go to another city, you have it right on your phone. You say, hey, I can send this to you, and you can see every single thing that another provider ordered on me, so you don't have to repeat it, or it may help you get to your diagnosis and treatment faster.
And I reflect back on the HITECH Act, right? It was, I look at it as the government was an investor in how to reimagine delivery of care. Obviously, we've come a long way, and frankly, we wouldn't have been able to respond to COVID as well as we did without the HITECH Act, because our charts would have still been on the wall. Right. So so we had a different access issue. So the point there being is I sense that, I agree that, and I'm not trying to get political here, but trust me, it takes a team to win. So but the idea of a national round two, if you will, of investors coming in and building this national infrastructure that allows this ubiquity of data, liquidity of data to occur, seems to be kind of a step one, right? And so that takes a lot of health systems to collaborate. That takes a lot of EHR platforms to collaborate. That requires a lot of breaking down the walls in order for care to be first and foremost, which I know it is for you. More to come on that particular front, but talking about the virtual shift and the use of digital tools and things of that nature, telehealth, to your point, I see a lot of it being more defining what telehealth is. Some people still think of it as a video. And by the way, just because you're a doctor and I'm a consumer does not mean we're in a telehealth session right now, right? But a lot of people think of it that way. The point there being is, so it's not episodic. Telehealth is not an episodic. Use of chatbots is not episodic, meaning, all right, CMS, are you going to pay for that encounter that I just had, right? You got to look at it in the broader view of value-based care. And any thoughts on that?
No, I 100% agree with you, Tom. I would say even from a telehealth, quote-unquote, I mean, that whole terminology is still archaic in my mind. I
agree.
You got to start thinking about it as virtual care, and that care can mean, again, automated and ambient and out of the you know, out of sight, out of mind versus active. And you're right, it's got to be more than a glorified Zoom call, right? And yeah. it's got to take into account, what can you truly virtualize? Can I truly see Tom at home, listen to his heart and lungs, and truly assess him like I would if I was sitting right next to him? And it's important to also understand that you got to start to think about technology being less intrusive. So all the things that I've mentioned requires interaction, right? It requires you to go click and put on an appointment, go say, I want to see Dr. Patel at 2 p.m., start that visit. I got to put a blood pressure cuff on. I got to stand on a weight scale, etc. I got to take a glucose. But I think where you're going to start to see tech moving is going to be more ambient. And it's going to be ingrained in the things that we do, like the seat that you sit in your car automatically knows your weight, or you walk into your house, it knows more about you, and you have sensors built throughout the house that understand fall detection, or a connected fridge that tells you there's things in there you shouldn't be eating because you're diabetic, or you stand as you're brushing your teeth and your mat measures your weight. Things of that nature. There's all kinds of things that will start to happen where you're going to be more connected, and your health is going to really be. It's kind of like wearing a smartwatch right now. It's happening. You look at your watch for the time, but it's also measuring your heart rate. It's measuring how many steps you take, and etc. So it's not intrusive. It's not asking you to go click five times to do something. And I think that's where you're starting to get a larger adoption of tech and telehealth in general, when you start to see technology melt away into the background and start to get data based on your chronic disease. If you're healthy, it's going to try to continue to promote wellness and tell you, hey, based on your birthday today, happy birthday, but you also need a colonoscopy. Would you like me to set that up for you? Or, by the way, did you know you're due for your mammogram? You had one this time, one last year, right? I mean, Facebook reminds you of memories from a year before. Why can't automatically your devices remind you of when you had a mammogram or your last colonoscopy? Or, hey, by the way, you need to get your flu vaccine because it's the season, and here's the places around you based on GPS location where you can get it. That's how seamless it needs to become.
Yeah, I share your vision. You're spot on. And so it comes down to the homecoming, that setting of care, whether it's in a self-monitoring phase, if you will, or there's some reliance on that patient that someone else is watching. And I'm not talking about Big Brother. I'm just talking about, I know my data is going to my healthcare system, and I either have artificial intelligence, that chatbot that's going to engage me as my health coach, or someone's going to be calling me to tell me to stop eating that donut, right? But it still comes down to that. That's a huge shift. I don't disagree with that's where it's going, but I am still concerned about those folks in the urban and rural America, in that I need to re-engineer the definition of a home. Yeah. And those homes have to have embedded into, I always come down to one word, doctor, and that's simplicity. I think of my 82-year-old mother who had cancer. She couldn't take her blood pressure on her own. So it becomes that challenging. So the point here is that I think policy needs to shift on, it no longer becomes the question of who's going to pay for telehealth. The question is who's going to pay for digital access. And that digital access is the digital tools, as well, inclusive of a medical device. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100% agree. And we got to start moving away from a simple visit as an encounter is the only time you get care. And, there are about a billion encounters that occur in America alone. 51% of those occur in primary care settings. And but how about that turns into 5 billion or 6 billion or 10 billion digital encounters that happen in between those visits, and start to see where people get admitted less and hospitals start to shrink, and that you're not as big as a hospital system because how many hospitals you have or how many beds you have. It's about how small you are. And that shows a metric of how successful you are. So I agree. And you have to also consider the other components of health, right? You have to understand the community side of it, make sure there's no food deserts there, the appropriate food banks are available for healthy organic food that's available for patients. And that's the other And how do you start to gamify it? So if I know your every single thing in the grocery store has a UPC code on it, but let's say if I knew that you had diabetes and you bought some things that you shouldn't buy, you get dinged. And if you buy things that you should buy, you start to get a massive discount on your groceries. The payers would make out really well too, because you know they're going to save on the fact that that person's A1C is going to be better because they're eating healthier. They did not buy that 2-liter Coke. Instead, they bought something more natural, and instead of having something with high sugar. So that's where we start to think about how do you start to encompass everything in someone's life around their health, and make it part of it and incentivize people to be healthy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Dr. Patel. We're going to have to end it there. I truly do appreciate your time. It was great conversation, very insightful. I wish yourself and Prisma Health and their care community a lot of success in moving towards the state of wellness. So thank you for participating.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
All right, very good. Have a great day. I would like to thank the show sponsors, both HP and Intel. HP Engage long lifecycle products provide the stability, safety, and security you need, plus flexibility and performance designed for today and tomorrow. As well, Intel would like you to know we're going above and beyond together with new standards for business with the latest Intel vPro processors, delivering what IT needs for performance, security, remote manageability, and stability. And be sure to check out the program page on healthcarenowradio.com. And remember, connect or follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at Foley Tom, and follow the show's hashtag, The Virtual Shift. I'm Tom Foley. Until the next shift.